The longer the newscast, the more we learn about our panel members.
The answer is more than Bernie Sanders and less than Donald Trump.
Okay.
The question we don't know.
Yeah. Suddenly it's like Jeopardy. We have the answer. We have to come up with a question. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us for this 13th of July. It is a Wednesday. We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org. In some cases, we even like them. And we would love to see what you have to say and what's on your mind. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. I have something on my mind. Why is it that I, who am the president of the company, have to clean out all the dirty glasses that are left in this room?
In this room?
Here. See this one? This WAMC mug? Yeah. Inside it, it's been sitting here for 2 days. It's growing green things.
That's gross.
Yeah, well.
I'll be honest with you that I thought that that was a...
A prop?
No, I thought it was the thing that you put the pens in, but now I see that's over here. So
yeah, no, this is definitely...
I apologize.
Well, here's the problem, of course. You have a lot of guests in here for the round table.
That's true.
And
Vox Pop.
Yes, and we always give them something to drink.
That's right.
So I can understand that they leave it here, but upon
who among us does it fall
to clean out their cup?
That's a very profound. Very good. If you give it to me, I will take care of it during the break.
No, now that I've complained about it, I have to do it.
Well, that's 2 minutes into this show.
All right.
But we've avoided controversy so far.
Associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, is here. What pisses you off, Mike?
Well, I'm not upset about anything. I have a delicious cup of coffee that one of your colleagues had provided to me, and I am taking it to the little kitchenette area and rinsing it out after this session.
Which is why everybody loves you.
We've trained you. We have trained you. Free of any caffeine products, we welcome corporate attorney Rich Honan, who joins us. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. Good to see you.
Very nice to have you with us. All right. So let's go with what is in the news. And yesterday is, I think, Mike, you, this is your terminology, but a busy news day, right? By all accounts, a very busy news day.
Indeed, indeed.
All right. So let's start with the service that took place in Dallas. President Obama told Dallas and told the crowd that we are not as divided as you think, and tried to make the case that it was possible to move on from this the violence that has taken place over the past week, and not to give in to the fear. And to do something about it. He said, I'm here to insist that we're not as divided as we seem, and said that but he implored Americans not to give in to despair or the fear that the center might not hold. And this was a beautiful ceremony that we aired here on WAMC with both the police chief, Senator, President Bush, President Obama, all speaking and all having fairly beautiful things to say. But as far as the actual message, who would like to take this on as to how we move on from this with the words that were spoken yesterday in Dallas?
Well, look, he's exactly right. Will the center hold? Because if the center doesn't hold, Obama's right. If the center doesn't hold, then the American choice of equity for everybody, of everybody being part of the experience, is gone. And we will continue on some of the things that we have done in the past. Look, nobody could deny that skin pigment has been responsible for much of the problems we have in this country, people who are darker skinned for no good reason whatsoever, other than they have darker skin, have been segregated, they've been economically deprived, their kids can't go to the same schools. Look, we all know this. I've said it before. So he comes on there and says, okay, Americans, are we better? Are we better than divide and conquer, are we better than setting up separate warring factions in this country? And Trump goes on the television and says, police, police, police. And we know what that means. That means protect yourselves. I'm for guns. I'm for police. And yet we do know that some terrible things are happening in this country. And so I got to admire it. I heard from a lot of people who thought that this was Obama's best speech. I also heard from somebody who said this morning that I would just like to say, said Tricia, that George W. gave a beautiful speech and Obama ruined the moment by moving the focus of the five dead policemen back to his favorite subject. Could he not have let these heroic men have their day, Tricia, in South Burlington?
Was his favorite subject being guns?
No, I think his favorite session is bringing Americans together, which she didn't say, but I think that
no,
that's...
No, I assume she's referring to where he talked about racism and yep. the police force. You know, we know there's racism in police forces. And then the whole gun diatribe, and then the, you know, it's easier to get a Glock than a book, which I have factual issues with that one, but I...
It's pretty easy to get a book.
Yeah, I think so. I can get a book.
but I mean, don't you think it was appropriate for him to bring that in to this? It would have been disingenuous if all he did was gone and praised police and you know, and said the moving things that he said, which I think were from the heart, and I think it was a beautiful speech, and I was comforted by it. I was also very happy to see George W. Bush get up and speak. I wasn't a big fan of Bush when he was president, but I think him being a Texan, a Dallas resident, and somebody who deeply felt what had happened in Dallas getting up, I think that was completely appropriate. I think it was good to see them stand together. And it would have been disingenuous if the president did all that and did not acknowledge that we have problems that we still need to overcome, and that is within police departments. Some police have a bias, and it has led to problems, and we have to overcome that. I mean, I think it was necessary to say it.
John said the opposite. He said, hello, to see these police incidents as symptomatic of systematic racism is paranoia and destructive and divisive, says John. Rich, I'm sorry.
True. That's also true. Well, on those times when the police are out of control, I think that's a symptom of the divisiveness and intolerance. I still maintain that the amount of police incidents in relation to the amount of police civilian interactions is still quite low. But the problem is the stakes are so high when something goes wrong.
That's a really good point. I agree.
I hear what you're saying about him. It would have been disingenuous not to acknowledge the problem. I think where he went off the rails was acknowledging his view of the problem, because he's saying, well, look, one of the take, and I forced my knowing I was going to be on, I actually forced myself to listen to it all the way through. And I think, and in the beginning I was thinking, wow, this is pretty good. And by the time I got to the 30th or 40th by the time I got to the end, I felt like, A, this is really long, and B, I felt like he couldn't stop himself from getting into the political aspect, and C, Mike, to your point, I think if you're going to point out that there's a problem, you should point out the totality of the problem and not, that the problem is there's racism in police departments. Yeah, that's part of the problem. But
so you acknowledge that's part of the problem.
Of course, racism is fundamentally the problem, but it's not the only part of the problem.
Yeah, but do you think it's worse in police departments than it is in the general public?
Not only do I not think it's worse, I actually think most police get along better with people of other colors because I mean we could talk as much as we want about it. I think most police deal with a lot more diverse people than most of us do.
I agree with you there too. I think that police are probably as a whole are more comfortable dealing with diversity, and they deal with it all the time. But the question is, are specifically, are police more, is there more racism among police than there is among the general population?
But
that's an interesting question.
But I don't think that's, that is
remembering
a question.
Remembering that I did work for the New York City Police Department or with them for a year. It was a very interesting time.
And New York
rode
was
around
a safer
in patrol,
place then.
Rode around in patrol cars with them. I have some insight into this. I think, look, we are charging the police with being our agents to make sure that we are protected. Protected from whom? It becomes the issue. If we have put people into communities, substandard housing, substandard schooling, substandard the rest of this stuff, then police are going to be finding themselves confronting on that line, that marginal line, confronting people of color. And let me say, fear will do some things to people.
Well, I think these are all appropriate issues and they should all be discussed. I do not, but where I take some issue, Mike, is that I don't think that talking about that aspect, one aspect of one issue at that service was the right way to go. I actually think it undercut some of the other things he said that were good.
I tend to agree more with Mike, but I do agree more with Mike. But it wasn't a funeral service; it was a memorial, and it was also an mm-hmm. effort to try to bring together and to look at the events of the past week and to put them into some context. I think there is a lot of there's a lot there, and I think you're never going to please everyone on doing that. But I think it gave it a necessary context. And mm-hmm. if you don't speak about it, then when do you speak about it?
I absolutely agree. That's the time to speak about it. But I think it was a missed opportunity. I think that he could have set his sights much higher and said.
How so?
By accepting some humility, both himself and maybe on behalf of the country, and saying, listen, race and racial issues are fundamental to the country. They are passionate issues. They arouse passionate debate to the point of violence. And I, as the president, have been talking about them. I'm a symbol of them. I'm the first, president of color. But he also could have said, we have to be careful in allowing our passion to be misconstrued, misinterpreted, and maybe this is the time for us to find a different way to discuss this in a way that doesn't end up in violence. And I think he could have taken.
He would argue that he did that.
I would say
he did. I got to tell you, he is the first African-American president and the first president of color. And every time he speaks of racism, there's a whole segment of people say, oh, there he goes again. Oh, gosh. We knew he was going to do that when he became president. I mean, why can't you just be white? He cannot bring up an issue of racial divide without somebody criticizing him, saying that's inappropriate.
No,
he shouldn't be using his bully pulpit for that. Well, golly, if he was white and bringing him up, no one would be criticizing him. That's the odd thing.
I think, first of all, I think that he is not only is he allowed to bring up racial issues. I think that's his responsibility, and I think people expect that of him. I think the reaction that you're talking about is when he talks about police issues. I think he established himself early on as someone who was always going to take the side of whoever was against the police, whether he really means that or not.
I don't think that's true at all. He acknowledges that there are people that are victims of police abuse, and that is different than taking. There was a woman quoted on NPR yesterday who was outside the police station in Dallas, and she was the wife of a Dallas police officer, and she was saying, I just feel like President Obama doesn't have our back. I think that some people in that segment want unqualified 100% support, even when some police, and I agree with you, a small segment, but that gets it's the ones that we hear about, when someone acts inappropriately or commits abuse, they want, but you got to stand together. And this is what, DAs are reluctant to prosecute local police. I mean, it's a problem. If you don't stand behind all of us all the time, against us.
I hear that. I don't think that's what people are asking for. But I think where he made his feelings in an unguarded moment, but I think a very honest moment, was in the first time this happened in 09 with the whole Henry Gates thing, when and I think what will go down in history for everybody who's not an Obama lover is him saying, we don't really know the facts, but obviously the police acted stupidly. And that, in a nutshell, characterizes his view. And I think
that's unfair.
Well, that's what he said, Joe.
I don't think that was a well chosen way of expressing it.
And it was
I think
an
that
honest way.
Him.
It was one of the few times. It was one of the few times.
But I don't know when he's honest and when he's dishonest. When he says something brilliant and wonderful, he's not being honest. But when he says an off the cuff remark about a cop coming to Henry Louis Gates's house and kind of roughing him up, and that's. And thinking he's a burglar instead of the resident of the house. Well, it in the end, when you get all the facts, it probably was an unfortunate accident that happened. And he called it stupid, and that probably was didn't help things. But he did have them over to the White House for a beer, both of them. And I thought that was
right.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay.
So let's just take a moment to go to the letters. We have many, many letters, so I want to get to a few before we go to the break.
Roundtable. So glad when Richard, I hope I got his name right, or Ray is on, agree with half of what the other hosts say and half of what he says. So finally find a place that gives real voice to both sides on any issue. Without him and Ray, the Roundtable is as maddening as Fox News. By the way, WMC is unmatched. Well done, and thank you for programming like the Roundtable and almost all the others. And that's from Ramon. And Wesley says, excellent use of the bully pulpit. Historical note, the bully in bully pulpit means excellent or splendid. It has nothing to do with bullying behavior, as Rich has implied in the past.
I have never implied that, and I know the bully pulpit comes from Theodore Roosevelt, whose favorite term was saying bully in a good way and not a pejorative way.
Okay.
Sorry, I take issue with that.
All right, good. Okay, good. That's good. Okay, so... Michael says, in my opinion, one of the underlying issues is the type of individuals that are attracted and recruited to law enforcement careers. To generalize, many law enforcement officers are rather dogmatic. In addition to looking at training modifications, perhaps the screening process for the selection into law enforcement roles should be scrutinized, too. As somebody who has studied this, ladies and gentlemen, let me say I couldn't agree with that more. I think that's true. Melissa says, quote, establishing himself against the police and with anyone who is against the police, quote, this is a disturbing statement. Yes, he said that the police acted stupidly. Well, they did. He used the wrong words. Mr. Political Correct. Great discussions this morning, and that's from Melissa. Kevin says, too rich, too far, it is your interpretation of what is in Obama's mind. Renee says, dear Roundtable, the New York Times had an article yesterday.
I'll hold you there, Alan. We'll go take a break. We'll come back and we'll finish up the letters right after this. Well, we learned one thing. The email is working. We got a lot of it. We'll go to the letters and then we will return to other subjects. But I want to get some of the letters because they're very good, and not just because they attack Rich. Go ahead.
All right. Rogue says, and that's Lisa. Okay. My parents are retired cops. My dad is still involved with police training programs, has met in the past with president's aides, and they both agree with Rich that the president has made some statements recently that it makes it sound like he does not support cops. He jumps to conclusions about incidents without all the facts and makes statements that further increase tension between minorities and cops when we need to be focused on truly bringing everyone together to stop the violence. And Chris says, that's different. That's an ad. Sorry, folks. Michael says, what's with George W. dancing like a fool during the memorial service? I got a lot of comments on that. You guys weren't watching? Well, at one point, they were singing. The choir behind them was singing, and George W. was
doing the battle hymn of the Republic.
He was moving around. He was dancing around.
He was just swaying gently.
It was more than swaying gently. It was more than swaying gently. He was really moving.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It seems unfair.
Was it like Elaine Bennis dancing?
It seemed kind of unfair. He was obviously... And I thought his remarks were beautiful yesterday, too, so I don't know.
But. Okay. Trish says, leave it to Rich to criticize what most thought was awesome. Obama reached out, honored the fallen police, and acknowledged we have more work to do in the area of race, and that's from Trish. And my point to our
letter same Trish writer, from before?
I don't know.
Wasn't the first letter from Trish?
There must be a lot of Trishes.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
She was on my side with the first letter, and then once I started talking, that's usually how it works.
Okay. And Ted, to Rich, the majority of Americans did, the majority of Americans did not and would not hang black people. How many lynchings would it have to occur before it's okay to, for a president or any public official to speak about it? I get the impression that you believe it is never. And that's from Ted. Rich, the president subsequently retracted the stupid comment about the People's Republic of Cambridge police. And Stephanie, okay, that's an ad. Mike says, I would like to ask Mr. Honan, where is all the media coverage of the funerals of Mr. Castle and Mr. Sterling? This is intrinsic racism throughout our society, and for our president not to bring it up at the racially motivated killing of the Dallas officers would be ignoring the elephant in the room.
Yeah, I agree. First of all, I think that the media coverage was just superseded by the Dallas media coverage. I don't think that was racism. Right?
Well, the other two funerals haven't taken place yet. They were also not open to the public.
And it wasn't a funeral, I should point out.
Yeah, it wasn't a funeral.
But well, I just mean obviously people are talking less about that, you know, and more about the Dallas thing.
Well, I agree with the import of the letter. I do, and Joe will tell you as our director of news and programming. I raised it yesterday before and said, okay, if we're going to take this, the police funerals and the rest, I want to make sure that we are also, if it is offered to us, taking the opportunity for these some of these people who have been offed by cops and for apparently no good reason. I said, I want to show that we can do both of those. And that's why I like the fact that it was a memorial service. And it's why I like the fact that the president talked about it all.
And again, I think he should be talking. I don't mind him addressing the elephant in the room. I just want him to address the entire elephant, and I want him to try and address it in a more meaningful way that changes the parabola of the discussion, which right now is not leading to any answers.
Andrea says, I agree that the vast majority of police officers are not racist, and I agree that they have more interactions with a diverse population than the average person. However, a large amount of these interactions are when humanity is at its worst.
Good point.
I think it's a great point. I think this can take a person with maybe a slight racial bias and push them towards a more stronger racial stance. Again, I think that most of our police officers in the country are wonderful and a great asset to our communities. That's from Andrea in Clifton Park. Okay.
I agree with that.
And Bonnie says, when will the most ardent gun enthused Americans come to the understanding that a massive quantity of guns in this country fuels the understandable wariness of our police? Any reasonable cop has to ask themselves, is this one armed? They dare not go by how innocent a person appears. Solution, fewer guns overall, cops and public. And, you know, that's easy to say.
I think that's part of the discussion as well. I think it's a holistic discussion. I think that's a very important part of it.
Okay, Rich, if it's a white guy like you reaching into his pocket to bring out his driver's license, as opposed to what appears to be a wonderful black man reaching into the same pocket, and one gets shot and one doesn't, and we know that from the stats. So that's what's so awful about all of this.
I agree, but I would add, if you have the cop here and say, why are you more on edge with this person? Is it because he's black, or then you would be on edge with Mr. 1% in his suit? I'd like to hear that answer because I think that's part of the discussion.
And I don't know what that answer is. That's a difficult question.
It's a difficult question to ask, and it's a really difficult question to answer.
Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. All right.
Just as you're going through the letters, it occurs to me, ask cops in general what they think of gun control, and I think the answer you get is they want much more rigid gun control. They don't want to have to stop people with guns in their cars.
They don't
want them in houses where they're responding to police calls. And if we're going to stand behind our police, maybe we should think about standing behind that strong belief that would make all society safer.
I agree, but I think we need to stand behind them on the issues where we agree with them, as well as the issues where we don't agree with them.
Well, you want to have their back, right or wrong?
No, I think I want to, not right or wrong, but I want to start with the presumption that yes, I not knowing anything else, I will support. I'd like us to get to the point where, not knowing anything else, we support the police until we learn something differently.
And then what happens when we learn something different?
That's a whole new increase.
Alan,
yes. Obama reversed that presumption. He stands the other way until it's proven that the cops did something right. And I think that what has been picked up.
Based on a not so thoughtful comment 7 years ago.
It was at a time when everything that Obama said was scripted and telepromptered, and that was one of the few things that he said off the top of his head, which is why I think, yes, you say, Rich, you can't know what he's thinking. I think that's where he let us know where he's thinking. And by the way, every time, and he has confirmed that in every incident thereafter.
Well, I think that's overreach. I do, Rich, but let's go on with the letters. Why does Rich always go out of his way to find some fault with Obama? He is really grasping at straws. Well, I helped him.
I don't need to go out of my way to find fault.
He is really grasping right there in front of us.
Curated by Alan Shore.
Yes, he is really grasping at straws here. I hope he doesn't prosecute his cases the way he argues against Obama. He's extremely ineffective and obviously biased against our fine president.
By this time I am biased against Obama. I don't think there's any.
By
doubt
which
about that.
Time? By the time you woke up in the morning.
No. Hey, listen, I was ready, along with everybody else. You might not think this, but along with everybody else, you know, I was.
No, we talked about it. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, wow, you know, maybe this can be different.
It's the
time. I will say, how about I'd like to compare compare all the politicians' statements to the statements of like the ordinary people. The Dallas police chief, that guy was incredible. The woman who got shot in the leg and was praising the police. Yeah. The emergency room surgeon. Look at the heights that these people rose to. You know, I think that's really more of the story.
Well, Barbara writes, I'm not sure Mr. Hohner was listening to the same remarks that President Obama made as I was. The president was not one-sided at all in terms of speaking of the emotions and the history that leads to violence. He is in the unique position of being able to speak to the black community and cautioning them, as well as all Americans, for yielding to emotional and violent actions, which he did.
I don't think he did.
All right, well... That's one of the perceptions.
And I don't think he has.
Deanne says, I think you missed the point that Obama was saying that we are all prejudiced underneath, and he has not brought up race issues as much as he could have. I did not hear anything in his speech about police racism. He was calling us all together so that we not become against each other. This is one of his strengths. He calls out the best in us. Rich Honan only says negative things about him. Rich, enjoy what he brings to the show, but he has no credibility since his opinion, nothing Obama does or says can ever be good or right. Please. That's from Jay. And like all these other things. James says, I am white. I lived in a working-class neighborhood and poor neighborhood in New York City that was 90% non-white from 1968 to 76. The round table panel cannot handle the truth of what actually happened between the races on the street at that time and that place. The liberal storyline, re-urban integration in the 65 to 80, is wrong and deeply offensive to people who actually lived there and witnessed what happened. There will never be a true dialogue. That's what he said.
Well, it's a grim outlook.
Well, I know. Well,
when are we going to have the true dialogue? Who's going to effort that dialogue? Who's going to create the environment where we can have that dialogue?
I would argue that there was a great attempt made to start that dialogue yesterday. But I'm not overly critical. I mean, I disagree with you, but I'm not overly critical of your point because I do think that because of your mindset and the mindset of many others that we're not going to take that and allow that to be a step. In a direction to have the dialogue that is necessary.
Joe, I hear that.
Again, I say I don't. If a speech of that magnitude yesterday doesn't do it, and what we said at this at Newtown, if that speech didn't do it in that horrible event, what the hell's going to do it?
Well, first I would say. If you're saying, you know, we're starting that dialogue seven years in, I think that's too late.
No, that's not fair. We started that dialogue.
I'm not sure we effectively ever started that dialogue.
Well, that dialogue's been going on for a long time.
That's true.
Let's go to a break.
Okay.
Break. And when we come back, we'll be back. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Berkshire Highbridge Dental Implants. Doctors Kleederman and Williams offering prosthetic and restorative options for complex dental problems with the Highbridge Full Mouth Restoration. BerkshireHighbridge.com. UHY Advisors, accountants and tax advisors to business, government, and not-for-profits, serving the Capital Region for over 50 years. UHY-US.com. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham providing individual career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing. Careers in Transition, LLC.com. And Davidson Brothers Brew Pub, featuring food, ales, entertainment, and more, serving lunch and dinner 7 days a week in downtown Glens Falls, New York. DavidsonBrothers.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to the panel discussion this morning. I do want to get to some other topics, and we thank you for all your letters. You can continue them. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let's do a quick bonus round here. First of all, we talked yesterday about the interviews that Ruth Bader Ginsburg has been giving. And Donald Trump has come out and fired back and said that she is a disgrace and that she should resign from the court. And for what it's worth, major editorials in the New York Times and a couple of other places have sided more with Trump than with Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
We have an attorney in the room.
Yes.
It would be very interesting to hear, Rich, what you think about
a sitting... You may think it's going to be interesting, but I think it's going to be predictable.
A sitting member of the U.S. Supreme Court expressing specifically their political... Yeah.
And when you do it, be sure to talk about Alito and Scalia in their speeches. Will you please?
First, I want to point out that to Alan's initial point about cleaning the coffee cups, I did fix the headphones that were broken
when
I came.
Proud of
that's
you.
Good.
We're very proud.
I have in some small way left the world a better place.
With some band.
We'll check it out.
I aspired to be a roadie. I think that I think most veteran court watchers would be surprised. You know, right wing, left wing, conservative, liberal would be surprised at the directness and the political nature of her comments. I think most people would say that's somewhat out of the ordinary for a sitting Supreme Court justice.
Yeah, it might be.
It's not unheard of, but I'm trying
Douglas
to think
did
of...
Douglas did it a lot. Douglas did it a lot.
Other
people did it. Secondly, look at it this way, Rich. It may be that she sees this country coming to a crossroads and says, you know, look, there may have been somebody in Germany who did it when they're 90. It takes an extraordinary person to go outside the parameters of usual political discourse. And she is doing that right now because she's obviously frightened. And I don't blame her.
I fully respect that. And I think she has every right to do that. But I would say if that's what she now wants her role to be, all right, she has a very important role as Supreme Court Justice. If she now wants to shift that role, which she has every right, and I'd argue she probably has the obligation if she feels that strongly about it, step down and make and step down and become a political person. You can't. The whole system is based upon the Supreme Court, and we know this is a fiction, but the Supreme Court is supposed to try.
Yeah, you
to
tell
try
that to
be above
Thomas
politics.
And to Alito and to Scalia
all,
and all
of course
those guys.
They're all political. It's a political body, but Alan, I think even you would have to admit that it's unusual for a sitting Supreme Court justice to be that overtly
and directly political. I just said it was unusual,
and
I thought she did it, Rich, because she knew that this was an incredibly important, poignant crossroads that the United States is coming to, as other societies have when they went down the wrong path. I think that's what she said, and I, for one, think she has First Amendment rights like everybody else does, and that I'm glad she did it, and I'm sure that if it came to a matter of writing an opinion, you would have found the same sentiments there, as you do with Clarence Thomas when he dares to open his mouth, or any of the others.
But don't you think it undercuts a little bit the credibility of the institution?
Well, I don't have any credibility because I think it's a political body. And I think now that we're talking about this election, just look at the rhetoric.
Yeah.
It's Trump is saying, if you elect me, I'm going to put four mouthpieces on the court. And here are the names of the four mouthpieces I'm going to put who are going to reiterate my views. And I'm saying, hey, if you're crazy, you know, you don't understand that that's the way this thing works. They're a bunch of marionettes. That's who they are.
Mike, who's right?
I think that it was pretty obvious, and we did say this when we talked about it on Tuesday's panel, that Ginsburg is, you know, soon to be leaving the court. And she's kind of signaled that, and her openness probably is furthermore states that, you know.
By the way, if you're that age and you just want to kind of share your opinions, like, what's wrong?
Yeah,
I agree with you from an individual standpoint, but then you're still tied to the institution in some way.
I understand that. Okay, so let's go to.
I'm not terribly offended by it.
Okay,
just.
Let's go to Bernie Sanders endorsing Hillary Clinton. It took a while, but it happened yesterday, clearing away the last major obstacle to a united front for the party heading into its convention this month and the fall election. What did you make of the announcement? Was it enough? What did you think? Was there anything that struck you?
Glad it happened myself. I think, you know, a lot of people thought Bernie had lost it, was waiting to cause trouble at the convention. Turns out that the man I've interviewed maybe 100 times is not that way. That he's made his deal with Hillary, and she has gave a very good speech, very fine speech, talking about some of the areas that they have common beliefs in. And if Hillary is to win this election. If she is to win this election, she needed to bring the Bernieites over. Now, we have heard from several of them this morning who say, I don't care what he did, and I don't care what Elizabeth Warren did. I'm just not going to vote for that woman. Well, you know, there's a time to give it up, and then there's a time to look at the concept that, you know, you got to make choices in life, whether you like it or not. You got to make choices, and these are choices. If somebody on the left says, I'm voting for Jill Stein, and I usually vote for the Democratic candidate, that is really a vote for Trump. That simple.
Give them time. They'll come over.
Not all of them.
Maybe not all of them, but enough.
Mike?
No, I worried that Bernie was overshadowed Hillary yesterday. He gave such a strong speech. I think he fired up his audience, and then she took over, and it was
not as louder than usual.
She did well. She was strong, but you know, I was worried that maybe, you know, he stood taller than her, and he seemed to have more boom in his voice, and you know, maybe it was a bit of a swan song. I think the proof will be in the pudding, and he says. He's prepared to travel around the country and deliver that message. And if he does that, he has kind of a cult following. Rich, I think you're right. I think more people will come to the conclusion that when you compare Trump to Hillary, Hillary is closer in positions to the Bernie positions than Trump is. And that's why he'll bring his supporters over, or a lot of them.
I think he'll throw himself in wholeheartedly. I mean, this keeps him in the discussion.
Yeah, it keeps him out there.
And keeps his agenda on top.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't mean just him. Yeah, I mean his ideas. And yeah.
Well, I admire him for doing it.
All right. Final point. The front page of almost every newspaper in this country has, and over the last 3 days, is about Pokemon Go. For those of you who are unaware, this is an app. It is a game. It is GPS based, and you go in a virtual reality and go capture these creatures using Pokeballs.
I don't get it.
It doesn't. You don't have to get it.
All right.
There's no sense.
That's somewhat condescending, but okay.
No. Meaning,
so Pokemon was.
I don't mean
to
be condescending. Yes. I mean to mean that it's so silly that it doesn't really. Do you know what I mean?
Like, I have no idea what this is. That's my problem.
Well, okay. It's a game.
It's a game you play on your smartphone that layers a cartoon character on top of what's out there. Actually, so you're like looking out at the corner of outside here.
Right.
On
so,
Avenue,
for example, if I need more Pokeballs. I have to go, I look at my phone, and it's going to tell me that one of the centers is over there at the lobby. So then I have to leave here, walk across the street, and then once I'm there, I can capture them. So then I can go and fight someone else. Now,
What?
So you will
video
you will
game.
See,
again, I say
you will see groups
I don't
of
know
people
that you need to,
playing
right.
this game. Alan, it's a game that every kid, every young kid in the world has played on, like on their Nintendo DS or something like that, on one of their handheld devices.
Since they were five.
Since they're five, but it's always been a console game. It's never been a mobile app game.
So what's the downside of this?
Well, people are walking in front of buses. Yeah. People are walking into oceans. People are doing it while they drive. That's not good.
Yes, the Department of Motor Vehicles points out that it's
downside.
Not
the upside is Nintendo.
No, Nintendo is
worth $9 billion more than it was last week because of this game.
No, yeah. Seriously.
Think of that.
Well,
interesting.
How true is that, though? But also,
it's numbers.
Yeah, but how are they making money? Because it's a free app.
The stock price,
they're capturing a great deal of information about the audience.
I mean, yeah, that's true.
Also,
yeah.
it's more than that.
Nintendo has always been on console-based games,
and for them to get into the huge market of mobile apps in such a big way, so that's all good. The other downside is you can drive through your town, so you can go to the Voorheesville Stewarts, and it'll come up on your phone, and you could catch one of these Pokemon. The problem is some of those places are like the Vietnam Memorial Wall where people really shouldn't be staring at their phones. Funeral homes, we have found out.
So yes.
That's a downside.
The other downside too is there is a way of they have lures and you can lure people in.
Oh, yeah.
And what they're saying is luring people in so they can rob them.
Let me tell you an interesting observation.
Okay, we have
in the 30 seconds
yes.
or 10 seconds. We have a young millennial in the office, young reporter J.P. Lawrence, who wrote our story about Pokemon. And he said he's been in town about 6 months, and he's made more friends in the last 36 hours playing this game, showing up in Washington Park and talking to people than he made in the prior time that he's been here. It's a very social kind of thing, and it hits his generation. And we may not get it because we're over the millennial generation, but it is popular.
And do we have 10 seconds?
Yes.
So my son said something that will change the view of every parent who has a kid who plays video games. I said, Nick, what are you doing today? And he said, well, it's raining, so I can't play Pokemon. And I said, how could that possibly be? And he said, because I have to go outside and play it. You now have a video game that you have to go outside and play. That's a game changer. That gets you $9 billion in a week.
All right, we'll end it there. Thank you very much to everybody, and we'll be back with more Roundtable after this.